The J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. I'm Ben Maxwell. We teased it on last week's episode and this week's podcast is our monthly J2 special, technically posting in May but covering what went on in April with our regular gruesome twosome, Stuart Smith and John Steele. Firstly, Stuart, welcome back to the pod. How are you?
Well, where did that nickname come from?
Well, I think I've run out of, the dynamic duo and whatever else I've been calling you in recent times. So that one just seemed to roll off the tongue tonight. Sorry.
The Christian system. I'm good, thanks, Ben. How are you?
I'm extremely well, thank you very much. And, John, back-to-back podcast appearances. Lovely to have you back on.
Hi, Ben. Yeah, thanks for having me back. It's always difficult to, maintain consecutive appearances with my injury record, but I'll do my best not to let the side down 2 weeks in a row. So, yeah, thanks.
Terrific to have you both on as usual. And I don't know, maybe Stuart, maybe gruesome applies to our recent accuracy with the predictions or something like that. I don't know, but yes, we'll do our best to guide the listeners through what went on in April in the second tier. And well, we opened the podcast, I think it was 4 weeks ago, after Urawa Reds dropped a bombshell by firing their manager Takafumi Hori. Of course, only a few months after he won the Asian Champions League for Reds. And on Monday night, as we record, slightly earlier than when we pressed record, Vanforay Kofu have, I don't know if bombshell's the right word, Stuart, but they've relieved their manager of his duties after a, stuttering start would be putting it mildly. And, Mr. Yoshida, who came in with a bit of a reputation, of course, from his time at Kashiwa Reysol, amongst other clubs, and Niigata as well, has, been shown the door. And I don't know if it's a surprise that Kofu pulled the trigger so early, but I don't know. What did you make of it?
Yeah, well, it only happened today, but I think the first thing to say is that Kofu have only won twice this year, and after they were relegated, they, in my opinion, they weren't kind of dead cert to be back in the automatic promotion places. I thought they might even struggle to get a playoff place. I think that they do have some talent in that squad, but it's not like one of the squads that we've seen in J2 in the past. I think last week, after they drew at home, I think they had they drew away at Ehime, and the week before that they lost at home to Matsumoto Yamaga. And I think after the Matsumoto game, the fans staged some kind of, I don't know what you call it, a protest or a sit-in, or they demanded to speak to the general manager. And I read that before this Jeff game, the only thing that would realistically prevent him from being sacked was a win. And obviously they ended up drawing that game 1-0, I think it was. And yeah, it's not a surprise really. They've been, with the exception of the time they came to Gifu and stuck four past us, they've been pretty laborious in front of goal. And is it too early for a change? We're 11 games in. In this instance, no, I don't think it's too early. I think a shot in the arm is probably something that Kofu needed at this point in time. So, no, I'm not surprised at all.
Well, if he had to win to keep his job, then he was awfully close to doing it, John. His side were beating Chiba 1-0 until the 95th minute when Naoya Kondo stabbed in Chiba's equaliser on Saturday. So, yeah, literally seconds away from maybe a stay of execution, I guess would probably be the right way to describe it. When we look at Kofu's situation this year, John, I mean, it's very much an outlier in terms of what's happened in J2 history, sorry. I mean, Kofu and Niigata have had to play four group stage games in the Levain Cup so far. So while everybody else in J2 has played 11 games to this stage in the season, Kofu and Niigata have both played 15 games so far. And while we know that clubs, you know, usually play their second string in the League Cup and they have to play a certain number of players under 21, I mean, this sort of extra workload that Kofu and Niigata have had to put up with that other teams haven't, it strikes me as a distinct disadvantage. And I'm not suggesting necessarily that it's played a part in their terrible league results and the fact that Mr. Yoshida's lost his job this evening, but I mean, you can't ignore the fact that they've had these extra games, and this extra workload has probably put a strain on his squad that, you know, might have had an effect on the certain league results.
I think that's a fair point, and I think there's probably a wider discussion to be had on another podcast about the merits of the Levan Cup, sort of full stop, regardless of whether you're a J1 or J2 team. Perhaps it's a competition that was needed when the J-League was a sort of new and blossoming league, and is perhaps, now in terms of the excitement level, I don't think even the most hardcore J-League fans, I don't think, pay much attention until you get to the semi-finals. So, I'm not sure the merits of the competition in and of itself. But yes, I think you're probably right that there's some truth to that, that juggling your resources across multiple competitions is difficult. I think I might sort of side with Stuart in the sense that whilst that's true, that was a known quantity sort of going into the winter break, and I think it's not as though the club has suddenly been asked to play extra games, you know, like they randomly qualified. I think that was always known that they'd have the extra games, so perhaps the preparation wasn't ideal. I get the feeling with Kofu, and I'm not so much Niigata, but Kofu, I think maybe, and this is just a gut feeling, I think the front office probably doesn't have the resources financially or maybe the motivation to kind of make a serious go of things in J1 at this point. And I think maybe that leads to kind of sort of maybe lackluster recruitment in the winter, where they're kind of, if we can get back to J1, that's great, but we're not, I don't get the sense that they're kind of, dying to get back to J1. I think letting Dudu, the Brazilian, leave on loan to go to Fukuoka, for example, was really strange. We talked about it before, but really strange transfer. Why would you let a kind of important attacker go to a direct promotion rival? I think maybe the answer would be perhaps some people in the front office at Kofu don't see themselves as a promotion contender. But then on the other hand, you get the flip side of, well, you haven't won. I mean, Kofu haven't won a home game yet. Like you said, they were seconds away from doing it on Saturday, and they even had a junior Barros who scored the goal. He actually hit the bar with quite a nice curler, which would have sealed the game just before Jeff kind of snatched that equaliser. So they perhaps there's an alternative universe where Tatsumi Yoshida is still in the job, having beaten Jeff 1-0. But yes, I think we can perhaps draw some perhaps fan powers played a part. I think maybe the front office might have been quite happy to just sort of coast through this season and then take stock of the situation in November, December time. But I think maybe sort of fan protests and poor home results, I think, is the fact. As I mentioned, you know, 6 home games and no victories. I think that's probably done for him in the end. I should mention that the new manager has already been announced, and it's a Mr. Ueno, who's come from the, I'm not sure exactly what job he was doing at Yamaguchi, but he I think was involved in the youth team or in the back room somewhere. But his first game in charge will be on Thursday when Kofu host Yamaguchi, so an early reunion with his former employers. Could be interesting.
Fair enough. And Joe, I'll have to correct you there. You said Kofu don't have any home wins this year. Well, they do actually have two. They have two in the Levan Cup. So how detrimental this was to their league form. They've actually done quite well in Levan Cup Group B. They've beaten Sapporo and Shimizu at home. And yes, Stuart, I wasn't disagreeing with your point that maybe they could do with a fresh voice. And it's time to his time might well have been up. But yeah, I mean, I had a bit of stuff I wanted to get off my chest about the Levan Cup, and this was a perfect time to do it. So
you know, Stuart, FC Tokyo supporters do one of the teams that do take the Levan Cup seriously. I think that's the message I'm getting.
Well, no, I mean, yeah, they should put all the J2 teams in it, John. That would be a much better chance for us to get through the group stage.
I agree.
Yes. Anyway, so that's thank you for mentioning the successor to Tatsumi Yoshida, John. Yes, a Nobuhiro Ueno. So yes, I must admit to knowing absolutely nothing about him. But as you say, yes, he comes over from Yamaguchi and will face them at the Yamanashi Bank Stadium on Thursday, as you say, John. You were talking about a couple of likely candidates to win the J2 sack race on last week's pod. Particularly the managers of Kyoto and Chiba, of course, and Chiba have done for Mr. Yoshida here. Did you see this coming at all? I mean, we knew they were struggling. Did you think they might have pulled the trigger this early?
No, not really. I think the pattern that we've seen in the past is that J2 teams, because of the nature of the campaign, you know, 42 games. Teams do tend to at least wait until after this. I should mention it's the Golden Week holiday week in Japan this week, so it's kind of a string of national holidays all together in a kind of three-game week for J1, J2 and J3. Clubs usually will wait, I think, until at least the end of Golden Week before they make any serious alterations, just because now, you know, any new coach that you bring in has to now prepare for sort of two games in 4 days. Which is not ideal. So I'm a little bit surprised. I wonder if perhaps there's more to the story than meets the eye. And I also think as well, kind of repeating myself, but I'm not sure if Mr. Yoshida really had the resources to work with to expect much better. I mean, neither Stuart nor I were excited by the squad that was assembled in the winter, and the results to me have kind of reflected that. That lack of pizzazz, really. So I think he can perhaps count himself a bit unlucky.
Yes, and Stuart, he has to face Yamaguchi in the first game in charge, and then he has to buckle up on the weekend and face a sixth-place Kumamoto. So the teams in third and sixth in the table will be a baptism of fire, you'd have to imagine, for Mr. Ueno.
Well, yeah, I mean, you could look at it the other way and say, well, he doesn't have a lot to lose in those games, you know. Renofo just coming off a defeat against Niigata last weekend. Roasso doing well. Are they playing in? They're playing at Kumamoto, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Well, Kumamoto are an odd team because they lose against some pretty average sides, and they've been beaten by Monterio Yamagata this season. But they've also beaten good sides as well, because they've already beaten Omiya. Well, sides that we believed would be good.
Right.
I should qualify that. So results that are kind of eye-catching. So, yeah, they've beaten Omiya Adija, but Omiya 13th. They beat Tokushima Vortis as well, when a lot of people, including myself, thought that Tokushima would be kind of one of the stronger sides in division. So, Roasso are up there. They can be a bit hit and miss. If you get them on a good day, then they're a pretty difficult team to play against. They're quite physical, and they're not afraid to put crosses into the box and use the height of Minagawa, who's having a really good season for them. But they're the classic kind of boom bust team. You either get them on a good day, or you quite fancy your chances against them. So in a way, they've got Colford don't really have a lot to lose. I think the first test will come when they get their next home game, because like John said, and like you said as well, it's home defeats are the quickest way to turn your fans against you. There's a lot of kind of kudos in staking your reputation as a team that plays well away from home, but if you can't win in front of your own fans, it's you tend to lose the public sympathy quite quickly. So I think the main job of the manager will be to start to prepare them for their next home game, and that'll be the first step on the road to getting their fans back on side, I think.
All right. Well, that is, the situation at Venfore Kofu. Definitely further down the table than anyone would have expected, 11 games into the J2 season. They're down in 16th. And, time for a change. Mr. Ueno comes in. And, I would say the only way is up. But, there's still six teams below them, so they could certainly drop further. We know that anything is possible in the second tier. So let's go further up the table, gentlemen. It was a good weekend for, at least the teams, the top three coming into the weekend. They all won. A total of 28 goals in the match day, and a quarter of them came at the Oita Bank Dome, where leaders Oita Trinita ended up with a 4-3 triumph over Machida Zelvia, who made it a bit squeaky for them on a couple of different occasions. But, Stuart, a fantastic start to the season for Oita. They obviously finished off 2017 fairly well and were one of the teams we thought would push for a top six position. I'm not sure many of us would have had them top this far into the new season, though.
No, and going into the season, a lot of the focus was on to the other forwards, Yusuke Goto and Noriaki Fujimoto, who they brought in from Kagoshima. But against Machida, it was, I think the adjective we can use is wily veteran Kenji Baba, who scored a hat-trick to put them on their way. They're a good side. They're a functional side, but they've also got that kind of spark up front. They've got a good kind of supply line. They've got Masaki Miyasaka in midfield. They've got Takumi Kiyomoto, who's coming back from a serious knee injury, but he's looking like the player he threatened to be when he was at Gifu. And they've got goals in them. And yeah, I mean, 4-3, and we should mention that Machida went down to 10 men after, I can't remember how many minutes it was, yeah, but it's very, I think it was
in the 12th minute, yeah.
There you go, yeah. By that time, I think Oita were already one up, though. I think they opened the scoring after 2 minutes. Yeah, but it was, I don't know if it was like where you were on Saturday, but in Gifu it was really hot, and it looked really hot in Oita. So to play kind of 80 minutes with 10 men, was obviously very punishing for Machida, but they put up a good fight, you know. They didn't lay down, they got themselves back into the game and then just kind of got done on the counter attack as well. But for Oita, yeah, they're doing pretty well. They like I said, they've got goals in them, and the difference between them and Fajiano Okayama, who have similar win draw loss records but vastly different kind of goals for and against columns, is quite interesting to see at the top of the table.
Absolutely. Of course, Machida are in your sphere of influence, John, and we're all disappointed, and you know, I feel personally responsible that they're on a three-match losing run after, of course, getting Dave Brooks to commit to coming on the podcast. That seems to have done them in, so I'm not sure what I need to do. I need to burn a voodoo doll, or I need to stand upside down for 10 minutes or something needs to change Machida's luck. But as Stuart says, I mean, they absolutely made a game of this. Down to 10 men after 10 minutes and 3-0 down in the game. They could have been absolutely forgiven for, not throwing in the towel, but committing resources to, games coming up, as we said, in Golden Week. They come thick and fast, but they got themselves back to 3-2, and even after Oita went 4-2 up, they pulled a goal back in second half stoppage time. So a commendable effort, and I've got to hope, otherwise Dave will never speak to me again, that this rotten run of luck is going to change for Machida pretty sharpish.
Yeah, I think the Dave Brooks issue needs to be resolved. You've got to have him back on as soon as possible. I think that's clearly the only that's what we need to try. I think in terms of the game on Saturday, I'm a firm believer in, if you're going to make mistakes, you should try to make them all and just get them out of your system as quickly as possible. And I think in that first half, it was like for your team, that's kind of as bad as it can get. So Oita scored from their first attack, and it was just like a long diagonal ball that a defender seemed to lose in the sunshine, I think. And Baba kind of slotted it in. And then yes, Kota Fukatsu, a favourite player of mine, the centre back, was just hopelessly outpaced and brought down. Yeah, I think Kohei Issa, the kind of the tip of the Christmas tree formation for Oita, he was shown the straight red. Credit to the match of the players for protesting. It was the clearest red card you'll ever see in a million years. And then Baba then had a shot which was going straight down the goalkeeper's throat, but a defender tried to block it and diverted it in. 2-0, and then Baba finished off his hat-trick even before half-time. So 3-0 down at the break with 10 men. And yes, as Stuart mentioned, I think it was about 28 degrees. In Oita, very bright sunshine, not an easy task, but I think Naoki Sommer will probably be delighted with it. With it, they effectively won the second half 3-1 with 10 men. So, yeah, it's just a shame about the first 45 minutes. But yes, we'll have to see. I think if you score 3 goals away from home against a team that's top league, you're satisfied. But on the other hand, if you've conceded 4, then it's not so good. I think that is the we've talked about it loads of times on the pod. Consistency is really important. You know, if Matsuda can just quickly snap out of this losing run, and they don't necessarily have to start winning games straight away, but I think they play away at Tokyo Verdy on Thursday, the first Tokyo Classic of the season. So I think they perhaps be normally I'm critical of Naoki Sommer because he goes a bit too defensive, but I think perhaps they should try to just shut up shop and make sure they just don't lose that game on Thursday.
All right, I think I said earlier that the top three all won in match day 11, and that was, of course, wrong because Yamaguchi didn't. And we'll come back to them in just a moment. But before we do, you mentioned Okayama briefly before, Stuart, and yes, they're vastly different goals for and goals against column compared to the team that they're basically joint top with. In Oita, well, Okayama showed a bit of bottle on Saturday night. It must be said they came back from a goal down against Kumamoto to win 3-1 at home, and cement their hold on second spot. The top two now have a 4-point break over Yamaguchi after their loss. But Okayama suddenly banging them in 3. You would never have seen that coming.
No, and just to flesh out the point, I should mention these as markers. Oita, after last weekend's games, have scored 22. Fagiano have scored 13 in the same amount of games. Oita have conceded 11. Fagiano have conceded 4. And so for Okayama to score 3 in a game is pretty rare. It's almost kind of call for rareness for that thing to happen, but that's because they very rarely concede, although they did go 1-0 down, like you said, against Kumamoto. The previously mentioned Yusuke Minagawa with a header put Urasa in front at the weekend, but I think we were talking off air, and if anybody hasn't seen Hayato Nakama's goal for Fagiano Okayama, their equaliser, they should definitely check it out. I'll probably tweet a link to it or something along those lines. It's a fantastic seal dribble where he dribbles the ball on his head a few times, knocks the ball out wide, the cross comes in and he puts a diving header in. Truly an excellent goal. And from there, they won the second half 2-0 and cemented their place joint top. It's, after they went 1-0 down, it was probably like a good test of character for Okayama, I suppose. They're not used to going behind this year. And so, it's kind of good for them to see, a good test for them to come through. And, the two teams at the top, they're, like I said before, they're vastly different in how they set up and how they approach games, but for both of them it seems to be working out pretty smoothly right about now.
Absolutely, that is the highest number of goals in a game played by Okayama so far this season. You won't be surprised to know with the stats that Stuart read out before. They had scored 3 themselves in match day 2 at home against Tochigi, a 3-0 win, but apart from that, all of their other games have finished either 0-0, 1-0, or 1-1. So, a veritable explosion of goals at the City Light Stadium on Saturday night, and a healthy crowd of just over 9,000 to see it. All right, well, I mentioned that Yamaguchi lost. I finally got my facts right there, John, and this might be a good chance for us to start to mention Niigata and Omiya, the other two relegated sides at the end of last season. Of course, we have to reserve a special mention for them each occasion, and if they all keep residing in the bottom half of the table, we probably won't have to after May or June, perhaps. But for now, I think we do. Of course, Niigata lost the battle for relevance last week against Omiya, but then they went and beat Yamaguchi, who, of course, were flying high in third. And, it was... The winning goal came in the 96th minute, a penalty from Michihiro Yasuda. But before that, Niigata had taken the lead through Ryota Isomura, only for Kosuke Onose to equalise for Renofa just past the hour. But a much-needed win, I would say, if there can be such a thing, 11 games into a 42-game season for Niigata, because they were basically the bottom of the form table coming into this game, John.
Yeah, I think Niigata, again, we can sort of, it might be a little bit unfair, but we can perhaps lump them in with Kofu in terms of having a disappointing start. But
it's all about the Levain Cup.
Yeah, maybe this. You're going hard on the Levain Cup tonight.
Sorry, mate.
I respect that. But I think it's just, I don't know. I mean, I have juxtapose slightly. It kind of reminds me a little bit of when teams in Europe they qualify for European competition, and then the following season they complain that they've got too many games. It's like, well, the lady doth protest too much, you know. Or another good one is signing international players and then complaining that they have to play international games and they're not available for club games. So I don't know. Perhaps there is just a chance we might be over-egging the Levan Cup.
I think so, but
I don't know. I think for Niigata, they just haven't quite got that right balance. A little bit kind of stolid might be a good word to describe. I don't think they're in any danger of slipping further down the table, but getting higher up is going to be difficult for them, I think. I'm not really sure. Perhaps just need some inspiration from somewhere, but yeah, getting that win at Yamaguchi, which is, it kind of seems strange. I'm Stuart probably is not used to saying that, Yamaguchi becoming a difficult place to go and get points. So yeah, getting that winner right at the death from the old familiar. Mr. Yeti, they're probably much just what the doctor ordered, I think.
Yeah, Stuart, you want to make a comment on Yamaguchi's bright start to the season? Obviously, slightly came off the tracks on Saturday, but yeah, they've been doing excellently so far.
They have, and I think it's something I've touched on before, and it's their attack. Their attack is it's so potent. I think they've got the two top scorers in the league at the moment. They've got Onaiwu and Kosuke. It is Kosuke Onose, right? Yeah. They've both got 6 goals, and Onose's goal at the weekend was I was going to say Maradona-type dribble, but it wasn't Maradona-type dribble. But it was a good dribble and a good finish. But they're good. Yeah, they play the game the right way. The right way, in inverted commas. They pass it, they move it, and they create chances. And so far this year, they're sticking the chances away. It swings and roundabouts. They Renofa scored 2 goals in injury time against Matsumoto Yamaga to claim a 2-2 draw a few weeks back, and this time they're on the receiving end of a 96-minute penalty. It's cliche, but it all evens out during the season. But yeah, Renofa can be kind of very proud of what they're doing, and it does sound weird to say, but it is a difficult place to go, Renofa Yamaguchi, these days. And credit where it is due to Niigata, because there'll be a lot of teams, I suspect, that go to Yamaguchi this year and don't come away with all 3 points. So yeah, much needed for Albirex, but it shouldn't take the shine off a very good start to the season for Yamaguchi.
Okay, don't worry, Fukuoka supporters. We'll be coming back to your result, or you might not want us to talk about it too much in just a moment. But yes, carrying on the theme of the relegated teams, John. Of course, we spoke at length last week about Tokyo Verde and their unbeaten record. Well, it appears we jinxed that as well, because Omiya came off their win in the battle for relevance over Niigata, and they followed that up with a 2-0 home win over the previously unbeaten Greens at the NAC 5 Stadium. So there you go. That's another thing we've jinxed on the podcast this season. Apologies to all the Verde fans out there, all the Verde fans in inverted commas, and two of Omiya's foreign players doing the business. Robin Simovic getting the opener for the Squirrels 4 minutes into the second half, and Mateus finishing the Greens off right at the death with a goal on the counter-attack.
Yes, I mean, I don't know. I'm getting it. I'm kind of a Verde apologist these days, I suppose. So I think just to link it back to what Stuart was saying about Yamaguchi, I think if you know, if you'd said to Yamaguchi you're going to be up in third place after 11 games, I think they would take that. So they can be pretty pleased with the start they've made. And I think for Verdi it's similar. I mean, it would have obviously been nice to extend the unbeaten run, but I watched most of the first half of this game whilst at work, so I didn't see the second half, which is where the goals came. But I got the impression it was a pretty end to end game with some good chances for our side. Some absolutely brilliant saves, both from Naoto Kami Fukumoto. I'll say that again because you enjoyed it so much last week. And Kasahara, I don't know his first name. Kasahara, the Omiya keeper, made a couple of. There's one save in particular which just, like, I had to. I wasn't sure how he'd saved it. I had to see the replay. I mean, obviously, I knew he'd saved it with his hands, but what I mean is how he'd got to it. So I think on another day, again, that result perhaps might have been a draw, or that Verdi could maybe even have snatched it. And I think, again, yes, that was Omiya. Not only playing in an orange kit like Albirex, but really needing a win in front of their own fans particularly. So I think perhaps that's a good, from a Kanto perspective, it's probably the correct result, like a controlled election in a totalitarian state. You know, it's suited everybody. Verdi is still riding high after 11 games, and Omiya got a much needed win that they can hopefully build on going forward in Golden Week.
Stuart, is this where you wanted to jump in and say your piece on the J2 goalkeeping?
Well, don't get me started on this, but yeah. Well, in the Verdi-Omiya game, there were two of the top three goalkeepers in the league. Kami Fukumoto, I don't say it as well as John. I should listen first. It flows a bit better. And Kasahara is really good. Like, they brought him in from Mito Hollyhock last year, and it's last year he got a lot of practice, to be quite honest, as Mito Hollyhock goalkeeper. But he looked really good, and it wasn't surprising for me when a quote unquote bigger team came in and snapped him up. I was surprised it was Omiya, because Omiya seem to collect goalkeepers like I collect kind of chocolate snacks during work. Too many is the point I'm trying to make there. But they've given everyone a shot to get in. And yeah, Kasahara is playing really well. I'm going to have to stick up for my own boy, Victor Ivanez at Gifu. He's without doubt, in my very humble opinion, without doubt, the best goalkeeper in this division. His shot stopping is almost second to none. And though he's commanding his area a lot more, he kind of tries to build up the play from the back as well. And yeah, he gave me a lift home in his car today, which was, it sealed the deal. So I should say I went to, he's not an Uber driver in his spare time. He's I went to watch training, and yeah, he gave me a lift back, which was good. So
I'm just trying to work a safe pair of hands joke, Stuart. I can't quite make it work, but something about a safe pair of hands, or he swapped the goalkeeping gloves for driving gloves, you know, something like that.
Bring back tanned leather gloves. if only that was true. But yeah, those three goalkeepers, I think, are the class of this J2 league, a league that, let's be brutally honest, has not always been blessed with the best goalkeeping specimens. But this year, yeah, those three are really good, and in my opinion, Victor is top of the pile of those.
Mm-hmm. Right. Do you have a personal ranking, John, of J2 goalkeepers that you'll want to share with us?
Yeah, I've not seen much of Victor, so I can't comment directly. But I think, yeah, like Stuart mentioned with Omiya, I've always thought that Nobuhiro Kato was a really good keeper. Sort of 2 years ago when Omiya were champions, he was fantastic. And I think he's injured at the moment, so he's not able to stake his claim at Omiya at the moment. But yeah, I've been really impressed with Kasahara. I think he might be the pick of the bunch. I think the problem is, I mean, Stuart's right when he says there's often We normally pick up goalkeeping mistakes, I think, when we're talking about J2, because every weekend or every match day there'll be a howler or two. But I think that's probably true for J1 as well. And I think sometimes in J2, the defenders in front of the keeper are often equally culpable. Like, you might see on the highlights the keeper like fumbling the ball into his own net. But he's often, if you actually watch the game, it'll be because a defender in front of him has just not done what they were supposed to do. So the goalkeepers had to come charging out of his goal and, you know, pretty much embarrass themselves. This doesn't count for you, Yusato, Jeff. It is always his fault when he does it. But I don't know. I think what I wanted to ask Stuart, maybe just as and you too, if we can digress slightly, when you're watching a goalkeeper, what is it that catches your eye, or what do you look for? Not just saves, but is there something in particular that you take away as being like, this is a sign of a good goalkeeper, or this is a sign of that it's a weakness? Is there something in particular that stands out?
Well, for me, obviously beyond the shot stopping, which is kind of the bread and butter of the goalkeepers, but I think a lot of it is to do with area presence. A goalkeeper that stays on his line too much creates confusion for defenders and creates a lot more space for attackers to work in. I think one of the things that I've seen a bit more, especially from Victor, ever since he arrived, actually, maybe that's because he's European, I don't know, but his kind of starting position is maybe 1 or 2 yards further forward than a typical Japanese goalkeeper. I know that's something that Gifu's goalkeeper coach, who used to work in Germany, and he's worked with kind of young German goalkeepers a lot before he arrived at Gifu last year. I know that's what they work on with their goalkeepers at Gifu, is that the starting position, not to any kind of crazy Ikura F. Marinos extent, but just having the goalkeepers as, whether it be in open play or whether it be from a corner or a set piece or something, a goalkeeper that starts a yard or two further forward has a chance to control his area, or has the chance to control more of his area than a goalkeeper that stays flat-footed on the line. And I think that's one of the things kind of above and beyond the shot stopping, which is it's a requisite for being a goalkeeper, really.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, I know Stuart is a connoisseur of the art of goalkeeping, so I feel a little bit inadequate going after him, but I basically echo what he just said, and basically in my own experience of following a team in Japan, I mean, following FC Tokyo and going from Hitoshi Shiota, who is now, of course, the number two or the number three, depending on injuries, at Omiya Adija, and he being succeeded by Yoshuichi Gonda was absolute night and day in terms of presence in the area and coming for balls, even for balls over the top, but coming for crosses, from set pieces. Gonda's aerial presence was absolute night and day ahead of Shiota, and that was something that, basically as soon as he was in the team, it was a noticeable difference, and Tokyo's defence improved markedly as a result of that. And it's still a shame for me to this day that, Gonda went through what he went through, and now thankfully he's back applying his trade at the highest level in Japan with Tosu. But, such a shame for all Tokyo supporters that, basically we missed out on his prime, because he was coming into it and sadly struck down by a mystery condition, and that was the end of his time at Tokyo. But that's a rather large digression, but an interesting question, John, and thank you very much for that. Obviously, we're not going to work our way through the entire table here, gentlemen, but I did want to touch a little bit on Fukuoka, John, because you mentioned them in last week's podcast. You thought they might have been rounding into form around the 10-game mark of the season. Well, they went down to Sanuki on Saturday and needed a late equaliser from the previously mentioned Dudu on loan from Kofu, just 2 minutes from time to earn themselves a point at Sanuki. So not quite clicking into form. Well, of course, there's a couple of games coming up in quick succession in Golden Week. They could be top of the table after those. But, a disappointing result at least in match day 11 when things seem to be clicking into gear for them.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I probably cursed them by talking them up on the show last week. I think that the issue, I think, for Fukuoka is I'm not sure that a point away at Saniki is necessarily a bad result, all told. But I think the fact that they were behind for so long, I think Kentaro Shigematsu, formerly of Zelvia, Machida Zelvia man, put Saniki in front very early on, about 13 minutes. But Fukuoka just couldn't get an equaliser until the 88th, as you mentioned, through Dudu. And maybe if that equaliser had come earlier, Fukuoka might have been able to exert some bit more pressure and win the game. But I think they host Yamagata on Thursday, so there's a chance for them to chance for them to perhaps get back to winning. So I think they've been pretty good at home this season, so I think perhaps they can beat Yamagata on Thursday. And I think they're at home again. So that's a big one. Okay, so they probably do need to win the game on Thursday so that they're going into the big game with Okayama in a good frame of mind. But I think they'll be, I'm a bit concerned that with these teams at the top at the moment, Oita and Okayama, they might be having their purple patch a bit too soon. And they might fall away. I think perhaps for Fukuoka, it might be wise to just kind of hang around, then maybe kind of sprint for the finish line towards the end. A plan that's fraught with potential problems. But I think we've seen in the past that teams sometimes struggle when they're out in front at the top of the table. It can kind of mentally be quite tough to be the team that everyone's trying to catch up with. So perhaps think Fukuoka not in too bad a position at the moment. But yes, probably disappointing not to get 3 points at Saniki, of course.
All right, want to give Yokohama FC a brief mention. They won 1-0 at home over Tokushima on Saturday. They are seventh in the table. We've mentioned the Machida. They slipped ever so slightly down to eighth after their third straight loss. And in ninth position after 11 games are Zweigen Kanazawa. Stewart, who were the most recent visitors to the Nagaragawa Stadium and the most recent visitors to come away with 3 points after a 1-0 win over your FC Gifu side. A Shohei Kiyohara goal just before the hour did for Gifu. So a brief mention on Kanazawa, and then of course we can segue on to Gifu's, I don't want to say what sort of a start to the season they'll have because you can fill us in on it. But yes, Kanazawa firstly, their performance on Saturday.
Yeah, Kanazawa, their win wasn't undeserved. They were the better side. They're a very physical side. The phrase that came to mind when I was watching it on Saturday was the Gegenpress, the German phrase for the kind of all-out pressing from the forwards, the forwards of the first line of defense. And that's what they did to Gifu, because I think teams realize now, and we'll come into Gifu in a minute, but teams realize now that if you get Gifu and pressure them at the back, then it's going to kind of pay dividends for you at certain points during the game. Their manager, Yanagishita, was sent off after 10 minutes. Speaking of people getting sent off after 10 minutes, Kanazawa's boss was ordered from the touchline because he complained too vociferously about a Yuta Ono challenge on one of his players. And I think after that, the thing that struck me about Kanazawa is that, and I'm not quite sure how to perceive this, but they seemed a lot more up for it. They seemed to consider it a derby. This is a kind of a classic case of the J-League hyping up a game to be a derby. So Gifu versus Kanazawa is the Hakusan derby. For those people that don't speak Japanese, that means White Mountain Derby. And so, but it's a good 3-hour drive between Gifu and Kanazawa, so it's not really a derby in the true sense of it. But Kanazawa's supporters seemed to kind of understand that it was a derby, and the players, I don't know whether they were kind of galvanized by their manager being sent off or whatever, but after their boss was gone, they flew into tackles and they weren't afraid to kind of put their physical attributes on show. They were a much taller side, a much bigger side, and they almost bullied Ifu in the end. They went away kind of deserved winners, and Gifu have to really look at it now. And I think no goals for the last four games, 3-0 draws and a 1-0 home defeat. We talked earlier about Corfu not winning in front of their home fans. Got a question for you, Ben, because you were so kind as to give me a question last time. Can you remember, when do you think the last time Gifu won a home game was? And I'll give you what month?
September last year.
Yeah, that's right.
Absolute stab in the dark, sorry.
God, look, try and act all smart ass.
He's
and I get
good.
It
He's okay. good.
September the 3rd against Dehime was the last time Gifu won at home. So you can understand that the supporters are kind of, you know, they'll support the team and whatever, but they want to see home wins. They want to see good performances. They've seen good performances, but the last couple of times, well, especially against Kanazawa, that wasn't a good performance. But they just want to see a home win. That's all they want to do. And something has to change, because quite obviously the defense is holding up all right. I think we talked about Victor earlier on, but it's the attack that has kind of deserted us, and the balance is a bit off in this side at the moment. Two very difficult games on the slate, away at Kumamoto on Thursday, they're another physical side, but they're also kind of, they're not in sixth position by accident. I did say they blow hot and cold, and so it wouldn't surprise me if Gifu went there and got a result, because it is away from home. And then next Sunday we've got another derby against Matsumoto, which isn't really a derby, but it will be classed as that. And it's a big game for Gifu. And I think these two games, if Gifu lose both of them, then I think Takeshi Oki will be kind of looking over his shoulder, kind of thinking about, kind of his job security, because it's so close to the bottom of J2 this year. That's the thing. Like Ehime are bottom on 9 points, but Gifu are fourth and bottom on 10. Corfu are, 16th on 11. Like, it's so, you can move up so quickly, but you can also kind of move down pretty quickly as well. And yeah, Gifu's balance this year, or the system, or whatever it is just not there. It's been there in sporadic bursts, but you know, they've only won two games all season, and you know, quite honestly, that's not really good enough, is it? In anyone's language. The only thing I can say is that, like, we had two of the best midfielders in the division last year. We had Cicinho and Yoshihiro Shoji, who both left, and it's kind of hard to replace that for any side, really. Never mind a side which doesn't really have the resources to go out and buy kind of like really good replacements for them. So there is a kind of an acceptance that we are kind of having to forge kind of a new midfield and trying to play the same way. It's kind of difficult to describe, but the players aren't of the same standard as they were last year, but the style is trying to be the same, and those two things haven't really connected yet. Maybe they will. Maybe it just needs a... Because there have been signs. Sorry, I feel like I'm going on quite a bit here, but there have been signs that they can play pretty well. They drew at Tokyo Verdy. They won they won away at Ehime. They got a good point against Tokushima, and they won at Jeff. But yeah, it's we need a home win more than anything. That's where I would put it at.
I think
and a home win against Matsumoto Yamaga would be a very, very nice win a very, very nice reward for the fans on Sunday.
Indeed, in a derby that's not really a derby. I think Stuart started to mention it briefly there, John, but this might be a good time to bring up a tweet from one of Stuart's fellow Gifu supporters who we know very well, of course, on the podcast.
We just peeked behind the curtain. We were chatting about Gifu Richie before we started recording, as we always do. Richie, if you're listening, we've got our eyes on you, making sure you're all right. And I was just noticing his very upbeat, positive guy, and always, you know, puts a spring in my step when I see what he's tweeting. So enthusiastic about the game and the community that we've pretty much built. I think at this point we can say that on Twitter. But yeah, I just noticed the tone of his tweet report of the game on Saturday was a bit darker than usual, and I got the sense, I'm putting words into his mouth, but I got the sense perhaps he'd lost patience a little bit with the Takeshi Oki project at Gifu. And I just wanted to ask Stuart very briefly. I was looking at, they've not won in five now, and I think all of the next five games look pretty tricky to me. Just looking ahead to like the whole month of May, I wondered what if Stuart was the manager, what would he do differently for the game at Kumamoto that's coming up on Thursday? Like, you mentioned that the balance in the team isn't quite right, but what could you do with the players that are in the squad now for the game on Thursday? Or is it just cross fingers?
Yeah, well, away from home, Gifu, they're relatively good. I mean, the only games they've won have been away from home. I know they lost the first game, which was away at Fukuoka, but since then, yeah, they won at Chiba, they won at Ehime, they drew at Verdy, and they drew at Okayama. And so, away from home, they're a better outfit. Whether that's because they're a better counter-attacking side, and it's difficult to be a counter-attacking side at home, that's probably part of the reason. Like, yeah, if I was in charge, I think that it's difficult because we don't have a central striker who's scoring goals. Like, our goals are coming from out wide from Tanaka, Paolo, and Kyogo Furuhashi. I think we need someone in the centre to cause problems and to occupy kind of central defenders, which in turn gives Paolo and Kyogo Furuhashi on the wings the space to do their thing. I think the thing that Kanazawa did, and the thing that teams that come to Gifu do quite often, is that if they nullify those wingers, if they stick two people out there or whatever, then they know that this year, because we don't have Shoji, because we don't have Cicinho, we don't have those kind of players, those top-class players that are able to play a through ball or that can create chances from the middle of the field, then they stand a good chance of nullifying Gifu's attacking threat. And I think what you'll see on Thursday at Kumamoto, I think you'll see a bit more physical presence. I think Yuya Yamagishi will start up front. I think possibly Woo Sang-ho, who's a Korean player who joined from Daegu in the K-League, who's got, as a training today, he's got thighs the size of tree trunks. They're huge. And
it wouldn't get you and him in Victor's car at the same time.
You certainly wouldn't, no. leave it. And I think he'll come in. And I just think, yeah, some kind of attacking change, because it's not happening right now. And I think possibly Yamagishi will come in, possibly Namba might start. And there's a kid we've got straight from university called Shohei Mishima, who's kind of highly rated when he came out. And so I think he might grab a look in on Thursday or next Sunday. But yeah, when I looked at the fixtures at the start of the year, May looked pretty rank, to be quite frank. And it was actually Kumamoto was the game that you looked at and you thought, well, we've got a good chance of winning there. But suddenly you look at it now, you've got Kumamoto, Matsumoto, Oita, Omiya, and Niigata in the month of May. And, I mean, if you want to put your negative hat on, there's not a lot of confidence going about in these games. And so it can go south pretty quickly. But on the other hand, if they get a decent result at Kumamoto and a home win in the quote-unquote derby against Matsumoto, then things can change. All of a sudden, but that's it, right? Like, J2 is so bunched up at the minute. I think there's only 10 points between Ehime at the bottom and Fukuoka up in fourth. I mean, you put together, say, for example, three wins, suddenly you're upwardly mobile in a big way. And so, it's going to be a difficult month, I think.
All right, then. So we mentioned down to Kanazawa in ninth place, and in various conversations, we've also mentioned, of course, Omiya, Niigata, Kofu, and Gifu, who all reside in the bottom half of the table as things stand after 11 games. So what we'll do before we finish off, gents, and yes, obviously we can put a bow on things once we're done with my next request, but basically I'd like you to pick one team each who we haven't mentioned. So basically from Matsumoto down, Matsumoto in 10th down to Ehime at the bottom, and one team for discussion that has, well, I guess if they're this far down, they probably haven't impressed you, but who you feel is talk aboutable enough after 11 games for any particular reason. So, John, it obviously can be a Kanto team for you, or anything you like, a team from 10th place to Matsumoto down.
Sure, I think Stuart's going to pick Tokushima, so I'll talk about Kyoto Sanga.
Sure, go for it.
If that's okay. Or is that okay, Stuart, or you want to go?
That's no problem.
No problem, okay. I think for me, Mr. Nunobe at Kyoto, he was probably the prime candidate for winning the sack race, although Kofu have now beaten Kyoto to the punch, but they got that really important kind of 2-1 win at Mito. On the weekend, coming from behind, which I think showed a lot of character. I think Mito went in front with about 30 minutes left, but Kyoto managed to turn it round and scored two in the last 10 minutes to win it. So I think if Kyoto had lost that game, I think we might be talking about another managerial change, because so far this season has been pretty wretched for Kyoto. And I think I follow the Kyoto. Is it Kyoto Sanga UK Ultras? Hopefully there's no copyright infringement with Barry Valder, but the complete opposite of mild-mannered Gifu Richie's tweets. He's been furious for the last couple of match days, so I'm really, really glad that his blood pressure will be slowing down this week. I think that was a really important win for Kyoto, because it gives them a little bit of stability, a little bit of breathing space, lifts them off the bottom, I think, above Ehime as well. But there's no getting away from the fact it's been a dreadful first sort of 10-11 games for Kyoto, and I'm still not sure that Mr. Nunobe is the man to put it right, but he's earned himself maybe at least another couple of games to show that he is. And of course they're moving into their new stadium not next season, but I think the season after, 2020. So I don't think they don't want to be competing with Girovans Kitakyushu for the best stadium in J3 now, do they? So we'll have to wait and see. But yeah, Kyoto, I think for me, the team we should have mentioned.
Absolutely. So anything on Kyoto before you move on to the team of your choice, Stuart?
No, just that I'm as disappointed with them, although I'm not surprised by it. I mean, last year they were bad to watch, and they were bailed out by Tulio's goals, basically, last year. This year has just been some kind of... they've continued on that particular path. It was credit to them. It was a good win. There were a couple of decent goals for them. But, I mean, you want to talk about papering over the cracks, then a win at Mito is possibly the kind of the true definition of that. I think they're still, like John, I think they're still in a lot of trouble. And they've got some good young players, but they just, I don't know whether they're just not hearing the message from Nunobe, or whether the message is bad from Nunobe, or whatever's going on there. But yeah, they're not in such clever shape right now.
All right. And was John's hunch correct? Were you going to mention Tokushima Waters?
I was, but I wanted to give an honourable mention to Tochigi, who, after I looked at the table and couldn't see them anywhere near the bottom, I suddenly found them in 12th place. I think that's right.
Correct, yeah.
They're in which, considering their start to the season, where they were just shipping goals like nobody's business, they've done really well to bring it back. They've only lost one of the last, I think it's the last eight games, I think, and that was in a way lost at Fukuoka, where they were down to 10 men early on. They've done really well to get back in there and tightened up the defence, not really conceding that many goals, and they've made themselves kind of hard to beat. So I think an honourable mention goes to Todigi SC, because they've done well to get back on track. Yeah, Tokushima, they're kind of on the opposite scale of that, actually. They had an all right start. I mean, they lost their first two games against Okayama, who were top, and Kumamoto, who were up in the top six. But then they beat Omiya, Chiba, and Kofu. Since then, they haven't won. So they haven't won since the end of March, basically. And I think they need to kind of get their ideas bucked up and pretty sharpish, because Ricardo Rodriguez, who I think is a good coach and who likes to play the game on the ground, he likes to play the passing game, he likes to create chances. I think he'll be on the clock before long, because they've invested quite a lot of money there. They've backed him, they've brought in Carvajal in goal, they obviously took Cicinho and Yuki Omoto from Gifu. They've got some good players there. They've got Taro Sugimoto, who plays there as well. They've been absolutely decimated by not having Daiki Watari up front this year. The failure to replace him and his goals. Obviously, Yatsunori Shimaya is a good player, but he's obviously hasn't replaced the production that Watari gave them last year. And I think that, they need to get their act together. When they came to Gifu a couple of weeks ago, and they played some really good stuff. They were unlucky kind of not to win that game. Some of their one-touch passing was really, really eye-catching and really well done. They just couldn't finish off their chances. But they need to start getting some results. And like I said, but the weird thing is, they're only 6 points off the playoffs as I look at the table right now. So it's not panic stations just yet. But if this Golden Week comes and goes without any more points on the board for Tokushima, then I think they will start to think pretty closely about Rodriguez's position. Obviously, I hope that doesn't happen, because I like him and I like the football that he plays, and I think he's got some good players there, but they're one team kind of that need to get some points and get some wins on the board pretty sharpish as well, I think.
Mm. All right, John, anything to add briefly there on Tokushima?
Yeah, very quickly, just going back to Tochigi there, away kit is all pink, is beautiful and probably best kit I've seen this season, perhaps. On Tokushima, I think what you might say is it's a bit like what Stuart's mentioning with Gifu, is you have to be wary of teams working out how to play against you, and you have to be ready to kind of adapt or adjust to deal with that, and that's something that the best teams can do. If you look at Lotina, for example, at Verdi, who I think we can compare with Rodriguez at Tokushima last season in terms of like relatively unknown coaches, they kind of look like, for want of, if you're being unkind, it looked like kind of pretty random or even desperate appointments when they were made. But Lotina has this kind of knack of, he switches the formation every now and again, or he'll often pick one absolutely random player as one of the front three. Sometimes it's a defender or a midfielder, not an out-and-out striker, who'll go into the front three. And I think Tokushima, you might just find with Rodriguez, he believes so strongly in a particular system, a particular way of playing. He might be a bit too proud, might not be the right word, but I think he trusts the system more than he maybe should. I just going back to last season, when I saw Tokushima play at Yokohama FC, I have never seen a team be so dominated as Yokohama were by Tokushima. It was like watching, it was almost embarrassing. In the end, Tokushima only won 2-1, so I think that perhaps tells you something about where they might be going wrong this season. But yeah, it was absolutely incredible to watch a team. The football Tokushima played was from another planet, and Yokohama just didn't seem like they could cope with it. But I think teams have obviously watched what Tokushima are doing, and they've picked out the weaknesses. Obviously, they're light up front now without having Watari, as Stuart mentioned. So I think there might just be a case of saying, I'm not comparing them to Gifu necessarily, but yeah, maybe there's more than one way to win a football match, and sometimes just keeping the ball and circulating it endlessly at this level, at J2 level, doesn't always get you any closer to winning games. And it's something we talked about. I mean, I sometimes see tweets, you know, like Kyoto Sanga. Okay, they have got a lot of good young players, that's true, but that doesn't mean the results don't matter. The young players, the results don't matter if you're in the developmental league or the youth team, but the results matter in the first team. And I think you can't always, Stuart's right, at Tokushima, you can't always point and say, well, we're playing attractive football, so please be patient, or, you know, that we've got lots of good young players, so please be patient. You have to have something. The fans, and I think the front office, need to see some points and some wins to go along with that. So yeah, Ricardo Rodriguez proved last season he's a good coach, but I think he might need to add some, might need to check the principles at the door every now and again in the away games especially.
Yeah, I think that's right. If I can just follow up on that, I think that's exactly what Ricardo Rodriguez, and to a certain extent Takeshi Oki as well at Gifu, like, possession is king for these two coaches. But I think when you look at it, like, I'm thinking off the top of my head right now, but I think Gifu had something like 64% possession to Kanazawa's 36. Hopefully I've done that maths right. But Kanazawa had twice the number of shots on target that Gifu did, and it's all very well saying we're a good passing team, but it depends where that passing is taking place. If it's taking place between the two centre-backs and the holding midfielder or whatever, then, you know, a pass is a pass, and if you're just passing for passing's sake, then it's a little bit kind of a misnomer when you say, oh, we had 60% possession or whatever. If you're making these small kind of through intricate passes on the edge of the area, or just on the wings or whatever, if you're pulling defenders out of position, then it's a different story. But I think, yeah, I think the phrase recycling of possession is, it tended to be used as a good thing, but you can have too much of a good thing. And if you recycle possession too much, it just becomes bland. And, you know, maybe Oki, maybe Rodriguez, kind of have to look at that and have to think, well, we need to be a bit more direct. We need to, maybe not direct as in long ball, but maybe direct as in kind of more decisive. Like, once you get defenders turned, then go for it. Don't just turn back and look for the next pass. Maybe take a bit of responsibility on yourself. So, obviously I'm probably in the Scott McIntyre camp of wanting to see football played the right way, in inverted commas. And I hope Oki, as a biased Gifu supporter, but also Rodriguez, I hope they both get their teams kind of upwards in the table, because some of the football they play, when it's done right, is really, really good to watch. So hopefully, fingers crossed.
All right then, terrific stuff. So before we finish things off with a check of some tasty looking fixtures for the listeners to keep their eyes on over the next few days in the next two J2 match days, it is quiz time. Gentlemen, of course, regular listeners will remember how fantastically I stumped you both in the last J2 special. And you know, I like to keep things topical. In the last special, it was, of course, how many of the teams that were in the top six after six games of last season finished there. Because we recorded after six games of this campaign, and I must admit, this. This month's question will not blow the roof off your doors. I did not have a massive amount of time to prepare. I had a lovely Monday with my kids on a national holiday. So, yes, the podcast preparation, specifically in terms of a quiz preparation, took a bit of a backseat. But I will ask you both, who was top of J2 after 11 match days in the 2017 season? No scrambling through stat sheets or no Googling while I asked Stuart to answer first, because you sprung one on me before.
Revenge. Top after
11. So same stage as last season. Can you give me a hint if you want, or...
No hints. Come on. Top after 11 games. Sean and Belmari.
Okay, John, what do you think?
Was it Nagoya?
No, it wasn't. Stuart, you're almost right. Shonan were goal difference behind Yokohama FC, who were top after 11 games last year. And that's kind of interesting in a way, because they, of course, didn't end up in the playoffs. But, yes, obviously a quarter of the way through the season. So much can and did happen last year and will again this year, of course. But Oita and Okayama currently sitting pretty. And, yes, their four-point buffer, we've mentioned how tight it is throughout the table. Their four-point buffer is the biggest gap anywhere in the table. Basically, as you work your way down the table, there's almost always a point between teams, or two or three teams in bunches. But yes, the 4 points that Oita and Okayama are ahead of Yamaguchi is the biggest gap in the table. And hopefully I've teased this coming week and weekend's fixtures enough for you both to pick a couple out. And whether or not they involve the teams directly at the top or not, well, I'll leave it up to you. John, maybe a game or two from Thursday's match day 12, and then another one or two from match day 13 before we throw it back to Stuart?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, okay. The biggest fixture for me is a dinosaur show I'm taking my son to in Shibuya, so I won't be able to check the games live on Thursday, okay. I don't think. But in terms of the football... I'm duty bound, I think, to pick out Jeff versus Okayama on Thursday. It's a 1 PM game. I think Okayama, obviously, you're riding high at the top. Don't concede many goals. And Jeff have done okay at home. I'd say their home form is mid-table. It's their away form, which has been relegation level this season. But I do think the coach there, Mr. Schneider, is under a lot of pressure at Jeff. I think if they'd lost the game which ultimately cost Mr. Yoshida his job at Kofu, yes, could well have, if Kofu had won that game, it could well have been Jeff looking for a new manager this week. So I think that's a big game for Jeff, perhaps more than for Okayama almost. And also I'd mention, yeah, I think Kofu, staying in the Kofu tip, Kofu versus Yamaguchi is a big game. I think Yamaguchi will be eager to put right that last gasp defeat at the weekend, and obviously their new Kofu manager has moved from Yamaguchi's back room to take over, so that could be a big game, and maybe Kofu will get their first non-Nabisco Levan Cup win at home this season. Going into the Sunday games, just looking to
I'll tell you what, John, I'll give you a second to do that.
Pick
a couple out for Thursday.
Sure,
sorry, I should have done it like that. Yeah.
Sure. No problem, yeah.
Right, Thursday. So, I can smell goals in Oita, where Oita will host Omiya. So for all you gamblers out there, get your money on a 0-0 draw. But I think that'll be a good game. Two teams that can open other teams up at will. And, yeah, in all seriousness, I'd be very surprised if that ends 0-0. Too many good attacking players on either side to go with. And then... yeah, probably like Tokushima versus Ehime would be, I'm not sure if it'll be a decent game to watch, but, Shikoku bragging rights, I suppose. And, this would be a good game for, Tokushima to start righting the wrongs of the previous, six games where they haven't won. So maybe those two games, and also, Gifu's game at Kumamoto but that goes without saying,
course,
right?
Of course. Well, you're on a roll there, Stuart, so why don't you carry on and give us a couple from Sunday as well, match day 13.
Right. In all seriousness, I do think Giffey versus Matsumoto will be a good game, but I'll leave that aside. I think for Sunday's games, I'm interested in the clash of styles between Kyoto and Yamaguchi. I think Yamaguchi have like we mentioned before, kind of at the top of the show, they have the movement and they have the variety in attack to cause Kyoto some problems. So I think that'll be a good game. I think obviously the game that probably stands out the most is Okayama hosting Fukuoka. I think that'll be an early kind of litmus test for Okayama. I think Fukuoka are probably one of the better sides, or probably one of the sides that match up quite well to Okayama in with regards to how they set up and the physical nature of both teams. So I think that'll be a really good game in Okayama. I think the crowd will be up for it. I think there'll be over 10,000 there again. And I think, probably Okayama and Fukuoka will be a good game to watch on the weekend.
All right, fair enough, John. It looks to me, Stuart's picked out a couple of crackers. There looks like some real doozies on Sunday's fixture list. What do you reckon? You pick a couple out that particularly pique your interest?
It's difficult to say without knowing the results of the Thursday games. We're obviously recording before the Thursday game, so that could change where my interest might be attracted to. But I think Machida versus Yokohama FC at 4 p.m. could be a big one. If Machida have lost to Verdy on Thursday, then they'll be on four straight defeats going into that game. It'd be very important for them to get something, but obviously that's contingent on what happens in the game on Thursday. I think Niigata versus Oita, probably a big game. Again, we talked about Niigata, saying they've not really not set the division on fire so far, but it's very tight. If Oita are top at this point and Niigata managed to topple them, then I think that might give them a bit of an impetus to going into the sort of post Golden Week game. So yeah, probably those two for me. What about you, Ben? Anything that you
There's loads. I think it's going to be a really interesting couple of games for Oita. A great test for them. Yeah, as you say, Omiya on the Thursday and then Niigata away on the Sunday. That'll be fantastic to watch. Some of these games for teams that are in different parts of the table than we would have imagined at the start of the season. I mean, They're Yamaguchi being third, playing away at Kyoto. I mean, Stuart mentioned that game. I mean, yeah, Kyoto, we certainly didn't expect them to be flying all that high. And as it is, obviously they're struggling mightily. But yes, that's second bottom hosting third. And you could never have imagined that would be the case at the start of the year. So whether Kyoto can build some kind of momentum from there. Their great escape, their narrow win over Mito on Saturday, we'll have to wait and see. For me, obviously we don't know what's going to happen on Thursday, but as it stands at the moment, yeah, Sunday looks terrific, and almost all of them look really interesting looking fixtures. So it promises to be another fantastic Golden Week period in J2. As usually happens, the wheat tends to be shifted from the chaff around this stage of the season. But with things still so bunched up in the table, we might be speaking it in our next J2 special at the end of May, and things will likely be still the same. Obviously, the league is so unpredictable, and any team can beat any other on any given day. But for now, I think that's just about it. We've covered what's happened so far, and we've previewed what's to come in the next few days. So I think we'll leave it there. So Stuart, thank you very much for guesting again on J-Talk. We do wish Gifu all the best in the coming days, and before we meet again at the end of May, we certainly hope that that tough looking fixture list bears some fruit for your boys.
Hopefully so, yeah. not just for me, but for Gifford Ritchie as well, to keep him nice and upbeat. So a couple of wins wouldn't go amiss. Yeah, you're quite right. But thanks for having me on. It's been a pleasure as usual.
Thank you very much. And yes, a home win, of course, would not go astray at all. And yeah, John, thanks very much. You backed up again on the podcast this week. Once again, a sterling effort. Thank you very much. And yes, hope to do it again soon.
Yeah, no problem, Ben, and I hope everybody enjoys the Golden Week football. There's football everywhere. You just gotta point your eyes in the right direction.
When you're not attending a dinosaur show. No J1 apologies on this week's episode. There were two match days of the top flight since our last episode. They were particularly fruitful for FC Tokyo, Kawasaki, Shimizu, and Shonan. The four teams to claim two wins from two in those two match days. FC Tokyo ended Hiroshima's unbeaten start to the season at the 10th time of asking last Wednesday, but then Hiroshima bounced back by ending Nagasaki's four-match winning run away down in Kyushu on the weekend. But so that means that Hiroshima's lead at the top of J1 is 6 points after 11 games. There are two match days that are still to come in Golden Week in J1, so that will be our focus on next week's podcast. So for now, that has been another episode of the J-Talk podcast. My thanks again to John Steele and Stuart Smith, and of course to you for listening wherever you are. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J-Talk podcast. Yes, 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 yes.